HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. You can contact us at hiv@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram, HIV_hour. If you missed the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on a Monday and Tuesday at noon, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
Hi, how are you doing? Hi, Sue. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm on holiday at the moment. Can you believe it? I feel quite guilty, Josh, being on holiday when I was furloughed for about 3 months, but there was some time I had to take off. So I'm just having a rest, enjoying myself, still doing this radio show, obviously. Still having fun. Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Tony? What have you been up to?
Well, I've just doing the usual stuff, doing the hub and doing some meals, sorting out some social bits and bobs for people. And yeah, I've been away for a couple of days this week. So yeah, I've just had a full recharge and
lovely.
Too much gin, but that's fine. It's all
yeah,
good.
Okay. It's fun. And how about yourself, Josh? Yeah.
I've been all right. I'm having some issues at the moment, but
right. You're working through them, Josh.
I'm trying to, yeah. It's
You're
quite stressful.
Trying to.
Yes, yeah. But yeah. The job's going well, and good. It's good to keep the HIV Hour going. And yeah, so I'm not too bad. So, yeah.
Good.
So what's on the show this week?
Well, we've got Lunch Positive reopening, Josh.
Oh, that's
yes.
Really good.
So it's been closed through lockdown. I know Tony said that there's still some work being going on behind the scenes, hasn't there, Tony, with Lunch Positive?
They're doing sort of meal packs in, like hot bits, we used to call them on the planes, just like takeaway tubs filled with like lasagna and stuff. And basically, for the people that come to the hub that I run in Worthing, I've been delivering out food to them, and they get a bag of groceries mix, and they get a bag of hot bits they just stick in the freezer. And it's an amazing idea. And I think they've got funding, don't quote me on this, probably till November.
And it's good to come back, isn't it? Because it's such a good service when it was before lockdown, and people really, yes, really like it and love it, don't they? So it's good to have it back.
And it's great because I think you'll admit, guys, it's, you know, some service users, they use Lunch Positive, yeah, to have a fantastic meal, but as a community, you know, as a way, you know, connecting with friends. And so I know some positive people perhaps just go out once a week and they do that, and then they get a fantastic meal. They meet their friends and in the safe place. So, and the doors open Friday.
Yes, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, so Michelle.
Oh, we've got a fabulous interview, haven't we, Tony?
Yeah, I'm interviewing Steve Hughes, who is a positive counsellor from up north, and he's got a really inspiring story, and he's just a great guy with loads of information, and he's just a really interesting guy. So that should be good.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I have read his stuff. He's, really interesting guy.
So, hey, I'm Tony, obviously, and I'm speaking to Steve Hughes. He is from Rewenstall in Lancashire. How did I pronounce that? Was that good? Rewenstall?
Is that Rewenstall.
Right? Rewenstall. Ah, okay. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about, your experiences? I mean, growing up, I'm 47. So for me, it was like the 80s were Don't Die of Ignorance and that campaign. Do you have any recollection of that growing up and, growing up as a gay, a gay lad or gay,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was born in the 90s, I was born in 1992, sorry to just plonk that there, but Yeah, so 1992 I was born, and I think we were, the world or the UK or Britain was on a journey around LGBT, wasn't it? I think at that point, and it was still quite. I think there were still some big challenges, but I think we were on a journey, and I think that was helpful. So yeah, born in 1982. A bit of background: grew up on a council estate, went to a normal primary school.
Yeah.
Single parent. My mum worked incredibly hard, and then was really lucky for various reasons to have the opportunity to go to Stonyhurst College, which is a sort of private boarding school.
Okay.
In Lancashire, really well, and fundamentally changed the direction of my life.
Okay.
And it was at that point, I was a boarder there, and it was at that point I suddenly realised that I was a bit different, felt a bit different. Yeah. And I realised I was gay, and that was that. And interestingly, it was a very Catholic school, so whilst there wasn't, but it was quite a forward-thinking Catholic school, and it is quite a forward-thinking sort of school. And I did struggle though with my sort of sexuality. I didn't come out whilst at school, and left just before at the end of sort of secondary school, and moved to Burnley College for my sort of A levels, and I did a BTEC. And it was at that point actually sort of fresh start. Didn't know no one else from my sort of school life went to the college, so it was a really fresh start, and I started to be a bit more myself. And did come out actually in sort of the second year there, and it was a really surreal sort of moment, because I told my friends before, I told my mum and stepdad at the time, and they just sort of said, "Thank God, we sort of knew anyway. What's the big deal?"
People that are close to you tend to sort of know, don't they? They tend to sort of they kind of know.
Absolutely, and I look back, and it was sort of blatantly obvious, really, I think, but when I think back. And then, I sort of eventually told my mum, and I was dating someone at the time when I sort of told my mum, and I think it was initially a bit of a shock, because she didn't sort of see it, didn't get it, didn't see it, I didn't think. My stepdad was particularly challenging and didn't ever accept it. I think that was a particular challenge at the time. I think Rotten Store isn't far from Manchester. It's about 30-40 minutes on the bus. So Manchester, I do believe, is the capital of it's the best city in the country. Sorry for those that live in others.
I come from Essex, so I have no place to judge. I come from Essex, so.
No comment then.
I do love Manchester, though. I used to fly out of Manchester, the airport there, obviously. And I lived in the northern quarter, so I love Manchester.
So it is a fab city, and I started to sort of develop a friendship base around there. My best friend lived in town at the time, and it was a really good an opportunity to sort of just develop who I wanted to be and be that person that I wanted to be. And started going out, obviously, in Manchester, and that's sort of when I sort of developed my sort of, if you will, the gay nights out and all that sort of stuff that I think, and the sort of friendships that are really sort of around my sexuality. I'm not on purpose. I just think I prefer to be around people that are a bit more tolerant or. And I think,
well, they understand you, don't they? They understand, you know, what it's like, you know, because it's not easy to come out. It's not easy to, you know, say to people you love, you're fundamentally not the person that they want you to be, and that's hard. Absolutely. And they understand that.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I've still got my friends from that original friendship group that I came out to. We're still good mates, and we have a good night out, and they do love going on Canal Street and sort of have a good time. But equally, I've got my own sort of, I don't say new group of friends, but they're a different sort of set of people that I go out with, I share various nights out with them, and stuff like that. So, as you do, I mean, when I was young, I enjoyed my sort of youth, but very quickly, fell, what I thought was fell in love, I suppose it's a bit of a I wouldn't necessarily call it that now, but I ended up getting into a long term relationship quite early on. So okay. I think I met my partner about 19, I think.
Okay.
19, something like that. We were together just over four years, and in that time I'd just finished university, I'd been elected to the council, so
amazing. I'm
a councillor in Walthamstow, and I was the youngest, one of the youngest councillors in Europe at the time, and so I think there was a lot of change going on in my life, and sure. Looking for a job, and found my first job as project manager in the Citizens Advice Service. So it was all sort of change, and that was great. That was perfect. Looked to sort of had an opportunity to buy my old family house, so I bought that and started to do that up. And the idea was that me and my other half would sort of move in there and do what couples do, effectively. And sure. Things just changed, I think.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff does change. And I think when that sort of relationship ended, it was a difficult relationship for various reasons.
Okay.
And I think that on reflection I think each individual has their own view, don't they, where things are, what things are doing,
where things are going. I think sometimes when you have a challenging relationship, put it that way, I think you have one person's view of what the situation is. I think you then have the other person's view, and then I think what really happened. Do you know what I mean? So I've been certainly in challenging relationships, and it's hard, isn't it? Because you're fighting for someone that you love. You're fighting ostensibly with someone you love, and you're fighting to stay with someone you love. So that can be a real dichotomy, can't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And don't get me wrong, we spent just over four years of our lives together. It wasn't, you can't just write someone out when you spend that many much time with someone. I think 2016 was just challenging for a whole boatload of reasons. I was up for re-election, relationships, sort of things, I was starting a new job. But at the end of that, when that relationship sort of ended at the beginning of the year, I did genuinely feel like a bit of a word free man, and it was a really, really odd sort of feeling to think that actually I can do what I want. I think that was the interesting thing for me. I started sort of re-engaging with friends and
like friendships and single nights out and stuff.
Absolutely, and I think I was always very conscious of, I was always very conscious of sort of sexual health, and I was always quite on it in terms of going to clinic, doing all that sort of testing and all that sort of stuff. I was always a bit naive and about sort of the whole HIV thing, and I always thought, you know what, I don't need to worry about that because it'll never happen to me. Even though, if I'm very honest about it, I did have unprotected sex quite a lot, and that was just the thing I was sort of doing, really. But I always thought I always went to the clinic, I was sort of checkups, all that sort of stuff. I thought that was enough.
So you sort of kept you thought you kept on in on top of it by going to the clinics and doing it that way.
Yeah. And then it was that December sort of point, really. I went for my regular sort of monthly checkup, and I didn't have any symptoms particularly. I'd had STIs before. I think lots of people have, and you sort of sometimes know, don't you? But equally, you know when actually sometimes you don't, and you don't have any symptoms, and so I was
I always
report to sort of regular checkups, and you just usually get the text that would say, yeah, your results are clear, or a text say you need to book an appointment following treatment.
Right, okay.
Follow up on treatment, stuff like that, which usually meant you had an STI. Um, But it was really weird because I remember being sat at my desk and I was about to start embark on a day of quite intense meetings for work. We were going through some sort of recommission sort of processes and stuff like that. And I just remember getting a phone call off an unknown number and I very rarely answered. So probably it might be one of the people that's coming to meet me or something.
Sure.
So I answered it and then just like, you need to come in. I was like, oh, this is weird. And then it was at the point at which I just said, this is weird. And it's just dawned on me what this potentially is. And I don't know, there was nothing that she said that even suggested there was anything wrong, but I just got a feeling that this is it.
Serious.
And she said, and I said, you need to tell me why. And I said, because I don't usually get a phone call. And she said, you just need to come in. I just said, is this sort of HIV issue? And she was like, yeah, so when are your testing to come back inconclusive?
Okay.
You just need to come in for some more blood. And I was like, okay, cool. The type of job I had, the ability just to, you know, to claim a diary, cancel everything. And
sure.
I went because I needed to get it out of the way. And she, even on the phone, she said, "There's nothing you need to worry about. It's just come and sort that out." So I did all that. Got a phone call from the matron sort of the next week, saying I need to come in and need to speak to the consultant.
Sure.
I was like, okay. This is a point. I'm preparing for the worst.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And what was really interesting was the test that so I had the blood tests,
right,
and one of those came back inconclusive.
Yeah.
So from what I understand, they do like three particular tests to confirm it. Two had come back positive, one had come back negative. So they did the instant sort of prick test, and that had come back negative.
Right. Okay.
Which gave me this weird sense of hope. And the consultant just said, look, I want to take some more blood tests and we want to just properly sort of get this confirmed or not.
Totally.
But he then said at that point, he said, but you do need to prepare yourself for the worst. And I was like, okay. But there was still this weird hope thing, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It was like, your sort of prick test has come back negative. Anyway, got called back in again on the sort of 13th of December, and I took my best friend Julie with me at that point, and
yeah,
that's when he just said, look, positive, and he just came out with it. It was just like the most bizarre sort of thing ever. And then he sort of said I was positive, and then he said, look, Steve, one thing I'm going to say to you now is that I could have given you a diagnosis of cancer, I could have given you a diagnosis of diabetes, they will be worse than what you've got now.
Yeah.
So, in the nicest possible way, you just need to get over this initial shock. Again, it'll be your life.
Let me tell you about a thrill.
Radio Reverb. So, hey, I'm Tony, obviously, and I'm speaking to Steve Hughes.
Yeah.
And you know what? At the time, I was just like, how do I do that? I don't really understand.
But, it's unfathomable, you know, isn't it? Now, yeah, it's unfathomable.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. But now I look back and think, you know what, that was the best piece of advice, because absolutely he could have given me a diagnosis of cancer and I could have had 6 months to live. He could have given me a diagnosis of diabetes, which would have had a much more impactful effect on my life than HIV had. That was sort of how it happened, and it happened just genuinely out of the blue. Never expected it to.
Okay.
I always thought I was quite stupid really, but I was always safe, even though I wasn't safe, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I thought, just I went for the clinics, I went to the checkups, all that sort of stuff, and I always had that view. I'll never be that guy. It would never happen to me. I don't know why I ever thought that. It could happen to anybody. But I just sort of had it in my life that it would.
Sorry. Do you get the sense of, like, when this all happened, do you get the sense of, like, in Canal Street, or I don't know how you say this, but like I know how I got mine. I was raped.
Yep.
But do you think that even then, even with all the, you know, the massive media that it created in the '80s and nineties, do you think that I know people even these days that think, you know, it's not going to get me. It, you know, one of my friends is always doing all, God knows, whatever with whoever. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, you need to be careful. And it's like, no, it'd be fine. So do you think that was, it was literally, you know, you didn't think it was going to happen to you, or you were like, right, if it happens, it happens? Or was it just literally, I did not think it was going to happen to me?
I was just like, I don't think this will ever happen to me.
Okay, cool.
I wasn't in the headspace where I'm not bothered if he does.
Yeah,
totally. It's not like I was doing anything. So I don't do drugs. I've never been that guy. I don't do massive orgies and groups and things like that.
Okay.
I'm not saying I've never done them, but yeah, I certainly didn't do them at the time. I was quite, not to say reserved, but I always thought I was quite.
But you're like a 20-something-year-old guy in Manchester, you know. No one's a saint, are they? You know, none of us are perfect. Not. None of us are.
Absolutely not. But I always thought I was sort of being sensible. I wasn't being like completely outrageous or anything like that.
Yeah.
And equally, I know people that are quite open and they do have groups and high and all that sort of stuff. But equally, a lot of those sort of accept that, you know what, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, great. They're not bothered about it.
Yeah.
I just don't think I'd ever. And bearing in mind that I hadn't had I got into a relationship quite young.
Of course.
I hadn't had much exposure.
Yeah, that's true. Totally.
The environment.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I was trying to do, if anything, of that sort of 2006, early 2016 period, was just get that exposure back.
Yes.
And sort of, I think it's a challenging one, and it's interesting because I remember thinking at the time, having sort of using Grindr and seeing people that were quite open about being undetectable and stuff like that. And I remember even having to Google what undetectable meant, because I didn't actually know what it meant at the time.
Yeah.
I'll be very honest and say, actually, I tried to stay away from people that were open and honest about it on their profile.
Okay.
And that hurts me a bit, actually, to say that, but I did. Partly because I didn't fully understand what it meant and what it was. I think it's me admitting that I was very naive, I think.
I don't know if it's naive, but I think it was that, you know, if you're not in this world, you don't understand it. I mean, listen, I've been positive over 20 years, and I've, like, only in the last 5 years understand what U equals U means. You know, undetectable means you can't give it to anyone. So, I totally get where you come from with that, and I totally sort of understand where you're coming from.
I don't want to say it pains me to say it, but it is sad that I didn't think that. Don't get me wrong, I was never rude, I'm not that guy, I'm not that sort of type of person to be horrible about it, but I just did stay away from the issue, and just stayed away from people that were quite open about having it. Which is why then I equally understand why some people just don't have that confidence to actually be open about it. And it was a massive realisation point for me when I suddenly got it, and I was like, oh my God, I'm a confident guy. Yeah. I am, and I have to be for my job, for being on council, having been able to talk to people. And and there's people out there that just don't. Good on the people that are out there actually being open and honest about status.
Totally.
Because that's not easy. And I've been through it now and get that it isn't easy at all. And don't get me wrong, you do get some vile people on certainly on Grindr and stuff like that that are just awful.
Yeah.
Because you are open about it.
Oh my God,
equally, and I think, and what then had to happen was I had to go through that whole process of what felt like coming out again.
Yeah.
To then tell people, because I felt that I had to tell people, and I wanted to tell people. But it felt like a whole coming out story again. In a weird
kind of is, isn't it? Really, it's something that's ostensibly it's part of you, like, you know, being gay or bi or trans or, you know, any one of the spectrum. It's that's part of it, but then you've got this other facet. Unfortunately, it's another facet that is just there. So yeah, it is like coming out again.
Listen. 97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb. Hi everyone, we have some community news for you. I'd like to talk to you about the women and family support that is run at the Sussex Beacon in Brighton. It says we provide services for women living with HIV, affected family members and fathers living with HIV in Sussex. Now, this includes offering casework, group work and peer support to women living with HIV and their families. And I can sort of vouch for that service because myself and my daughter took part in some of their support some years ago at the Sussex Beacon, and it was incredibly helpful and supportive within my own family. So I do vouch for that personally. Now, our monthly group for women only has been successfully running for the last 9 years at the Sussex Beacon. Now, obviously, things are a little bit different at the moment, as you can imagine, with what's been going on with COVID for the last nearly five months. And basically, the women's group has been run via Zoom. I think we're all getting to know about Zoom. I know I've had to, and I'm sure a lot of you, you know, and it's a great form of support of meeting people and seeing people. So Alice Booth's women's group has been meeting on Zoom over the last few months. The last Zoom meeting with Alice, because Alice Booth is going on to maternity leave soon, and Lou Thomas will be taken over from her, and she's another lovely lady. If you'd like to take part in the last Zoom meeting with Alice on the 31st of August at 11 a.m. please contact Alice on 07 530 425624. So that's the last online Zoom women's group meeting. But let's talk a bit more about this fantastic work they do at the Sussex Beacon with the family support. Now, just numbering a few things that they do within that is they do long-term management support to live well, HIV including, giving advice to help navigate services and improve confidence to manage daily. Also, information around HIV treatment, support with emotional and mental health needs. They say we will be able to listen, support, and where appropriate, refer to other professionals. Communication around health issues within the family, that can be quite complicated, and they do a fantastic service there. They look at the workplace or with health professions. Support with social issues, including housing, finances, immigration and employment. Peer support is massive at the Sussex Beacon. Trained volunteers who are also living with HIV who can offer support confidentially, either on a one-to-one or in a group. Pregnancy, new mum and parent and support concerns within the home, e.g. domestic violence. That's been quite prevalent, hasn't it, within this COVID situation going on. Referrals, signposting and care coordination. They work very closely to the Lawson unit in Brighton and other health focus groups. The women's group is, like I said, is held monthly and is open to women living with HIV in the Sussex area. The group is a facilitated, safe and confidential space to explore issues related to living with HIV. And now this service may be starting to reopen soon. I haven't got a date for that, but again, it's contacting directly the Sussex Beacon on 01273 694 222, and ask for Hattie. She sort of runs all the services to do with the family services and the women's group, and get a bit more information. I have been on occasion a guest speaker at one of the women's group, and they regular have guest speakers presenting and exploring special interest topics. Examples on previous groups include aging and HIV, and HIV within the family, ways of coping with stress. That's a big thing, it can be, can't it? At the Sussex Beacon, when it's up and running normally, they offer a creche facility, and they provide an amazing healthy lunch. If you've ever had lunch at the Sussex Beacon, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So do contact the Sussex Beacon directly. Just Google Sussex Beacon or contact Hattie at 01273 694 222.
I know we've briefly spoken about, but this Lunch Positive, I know so many good friends that go there, and I know they'll be all banging down the doors in the nicest possible way to get back in and to come back in. So it's been closed for some time, haven't the Josh?
Yes, I've been a few times, and it's very popular.
Yeah, very.
Are you going to go tomorrow, aren't you, Tony?
Yes, I'm going. I'm going to go to the reopening, yeah, definitely.
Wonderful.
It'd be great to get some reactions of people there, you know, and see how they feel about it coming back. And we can play that on next week's show or in 2 weeks' time. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and just another thought, actually, Josh, perhaps Tony can just sort of gauge as he's connecting with people, you know, how they've been feeling, you know, these last few months and coming back. That might be quite interesting to get on the show. What do you reckon, Josh?
I think so, definitely. I think it's a really good idea. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, look forward to hearing that as well. Yeah.
Maybe get a little interview with Gary, maybe. A little 5 minutes. I'm going to be busy on that day.
Yeah.
Please comment.
I'll drag him to one side.
Yeah.
So that starts tomorrow, doesn't it? So if you want to give the information about Lunch Positive. So that's tomorrow, and it's good. Can you give the address? It's I'm looking for it.
So the Lunch Positive contact details it's tomorrow, and it's at the Methodist Church in Dorset Gardens, Camp Town, Brighton, and the postcode for parking is BN Bravo November 21RL.
And can I just ask something, guys? Is it still is it just a £1.50 donation for the dinner?
I think it is, but they're doing it on two floors as well, so it's going to be, you know, normally they had sort of buffet-style seating. It's going to be... There's two complete floors apparently in the church, so it's going to be really spread out, social distancing.
Of course, yes, of course, yes. But yeah,
if you want to, there's more information if you want about Lunch Positive. So you can just www.lunchpositive.org, and you can call them on 07846 464384. So if you need the information. And volunteering, they do volunteers, they want volunteers as well. So
And that'd be a great way to come back. You know, you've been in lockdown, you've been sort of perhaps even self-isolating, and you're now able to get out and you want to perhaps get back into the community. That would be a fantastic opportunity, you know, to engage with this fantastic service, you know, we offer in Brighton. So, yeah, why not? You know, give Gary a call.
You can email them, volunteer at lunchpositive.org, so, as well. So,
wonderful. It's all there. Wonderful. Yeah.
So thank you for joining us on the HIV Hour. You can contact us on hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram, HIV_hour. You can also listen and subscribe to our podcast, the HIV Hour podcast. Just go to Spotify, iTunes or Deezer and type in HIV Hour, and you can listen to past shows.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.